So, hello, wonderful humans of the universe, and welcome to Getting the Tea. I am your host, Ali M, and I welcome you to our first official live podcast. There's been a break in the episodes because I originally was supposed to go home this weekend, so that was going to be kind of when I did the family episodes, and so since I couldn't go home because of COVID, that kind of put things on hold for me, and so I figured I'd just do a live stream as kind of a mid-season thing going on, and kind of end it there before July, because I won't go home until July, so we'll kind of be taking a long break. But once I get home, we'll have probably 4 or 5. And then that'll end the quote unquote first season of this podcast. Hey, Paige. So I figured, you know, this is kind of a space where whoever comes in can ask questions and bring up topics, but until that happens, I guess I'll just ramble, which seems to be my favorite thing to do. So I think one thing that came up in one of the past episodes that seems to spark a lot of things for people is bathrooms. And so I figured I'd kind of talk about that a little bit. Started my transition in North Carolina about around the time that North Carolina's bathroom bill was passed. And if you're not familiar, pretty much the bathroom bill in North Carolina said that people had to go to the restroom and changing rooms and locker rooms of their birth sex. And so if you were transgender, it was based on pretty much what you were assigned at birth. And so I think when that first came out, I hadn't physically started transitioning. So I was still just going to the women's restroom and kind of just being quick about it. And 9 out of 10 times I had someone with me anyway. And I remember one time, I think I had just started hormones. So I'd only been on it probably 4 or 5 months. So pretty much the main thing that had only happened is my voice had changed a little bit. And I remember I went to Scarewinds with a group of friends, and we stopped at Wendy's right outside of Carowinds and got dinner before we went in. And we all went to the bathroom together, and it was only like a 3-stall bathroom. And so I remember I had gotten out and I was washing my hands. And it was me and two of my other friends, and one of them kind of presents masculine anyway. And so the woman looked at both of us and was like, "This is the woman's restroom, right?" And I was like, "I don't know, is it?" Like I was kind of a smart ass, but it was one of those things of like, that's just, I hate when people ask that question because I can read, like I'm not stupid. So I think that was the first time that I ever had an experience like that in a bathroom or any change in space in general. So then I started, you know, my voice dropped a little bit more. I started getting facial hair. And up until I had my surgery, I still went to the women's bathroom because, I mean, it was one of those things of, I mean, you could tell if you looked hard enough, so I wasn't about to put myself in that situation. And 9 times out of 10, I've had more positive, I wouldn't really say positive, so I'd say lack of interactions in changing spaces from women. So that just kind of felt like the safest place to go, because I think it's more acceptable nowadays for women to dress more masculine, and people just don't even say anything about it at this point. So The bathroom bill didn't really bother me that much. I think it was just the fact that somebody felt it was an issue enough to make a bill about it. And then the reaction on social media, there was a lot of posts back and forth between people that I was friends with. And I mean, obviously that friendship ended soon after, but a lot of people, their excuse was, a lot of men can dress up as women and go into women's bathroom and spy on women. And it went down to like little kids too. And, I did my research about it, and I think there's what I could find like five cases in a while that that's even happened. And it's just, I just couldn't wrap my head around why. Like, it wasn't like something recently had happened in North Carolina, and that's why we made the bill. It was just like somebody got a hair up their ass and decided to make this bill for, no reason whatsoever. So that kind of angered me a little bit, and I felt unsafe in the fact of I already, like, before I transition or anything, I hate public restrooms and public changing spaces. I've never felt comfortable in them just for my own reasons. And so when I go to the bathroom, it's like I really gotta go. Like, there's no holding it or anything. I mean, it's like I'm about to pee myself. And so the fact that, and I know a lot of trans people who are the same way. And so it's like we just go to, keep ourselves from literally using the bathroom on ourselves or further, health complications. And these people are coming in and saying, now you got to go and feel even more uncomfortable. So it was just, it blew my mind, honestly. Like, I feel in a way, if we would have had some instances where in North Carolina around that time, or even just the world of like people, and most of it was men, and that was the thing that like nobody was like, a woman's gonna dress up as a man and go into a men's restroom. And that's a whole nother topic on, the issue around men being sexually assaulted by women. But so it was just, yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I'm all over the place all the time. And so it would have made a little bit more sense to me if we had those events happening around this time, but we hadn't. So, like I said, somebody, the governor just came up and was like, hey, let's make this bill. But so it didn't really affect me in the application of the bill, just the part of somebody's attacking, who I am in my community. And it really didn't get bad, and bad's kind of a extreme term for it, but I didn't have any issues other than that one time in Wendy's, which it wasn't, I didn't really feel for my safety. I was just kind of like, whatever, lady. Was after I had my surgery. And by this point, I mean, I had shaven my beard, but like I had a whole like facial hair going on, my voice was about this deep, and I had just had surgery, so my chest was flat. So there was like no inclination whatsoever that people would assume that I was transgender. And I remember it wasn't an issue when I lived near campus because this was mostly an on-campus issue that I had. And so I worked as a graduate assistant. So for 8 hours twice a week and then 4 hours on a Friday, I would go into an office and work. And, when I lived down the street, I could just go to work, not use the bathroom for 8 hours, which isn't really weird for me because, I mean, that happened when I was in high school and college as well. Like, you're always on the go, so it becomes a habit. And then just drive 5 minutes to go home and use the bathroom. So I did that for a little bit, and then I kind of learned the schedule of when people would go to the bathroom, and kind of go just when I knew usually people wouldn't be there. But it became a huger issue my last semester that I worked there. And so by that point, I mean, I had been on testosterone for like a year and a half. I had had surgery, 8 months prior. So everything was like done changing in me pretty much. And so it was an issue because at that point I lived an hour away from campus. And so it became a thing of I would leave the house at like 6:45 and then not get back or to a space that I felt safe until like 5 o'clock. So it was like a almost 12 hours of some days that I wouldn't use the bathroom because I was so nervous. And I worked through all of those quote unquote irrational fears because nothing had happened to me yet, and then something did happen. And so I think within those 5 months that I worked there, I think I had three different confrontations. Only one of them became somewhat physical, but the other two, somebody just said something, and I was like, it's none of your business. But one of them was like a, they weren't a professor, but it was like an advisor on campus. And to me, that one kind of, hurt me a little bit more than students. Like I expect advisors who work with all sorts of people to kind of be more open-minded, and not even like that you have to be more open-minded, but to like not even bring it up. Like it should just be like, okay, it is what it is and go on with your life. But for someone that is supposed to be a professional in college students on a campus that at the time had very little events but still had events for the LGBT community, it was just like, what? I really wanted to know, like, find out who he was and make a complaint about it, but to me it wasn't worth it, so I just didn't do it. But so I've had a few instances, and then I think the hardest part about it was I did end up like having complications from having to not go to the bathroom for 12 hours. Like now it's caught up to me, and I think I go like every 2 or 3 hours. And it's not on the days that I'm drinking like a gallon of water a day. It's like the days that I don't drink anything, I'm still going every 2 to 3 hours. And if I don't go, it's really painful. And so, I've had kind of long-term complications from it. And it's, I mean, just me going to the bathroom, like it's not anything that's been, if I do it, the world's gonna fall apart. And I think that's kind of the issue that I have. And I still have some issues with it, especially in more public places, with smaller bathrooms. Like when I go to the airport, I don't really care because nobody really cares about what you're doing in an airport bathroom. Or like Carowinds or amusement parks, like some place where people are just in and out and it's not really that big of a deal. But restrooms and like restaurants are uneasy for me. Kind of smaller areas, especially if they're not one stall, or can lock. So that's kind of an issue that I still deal with. But 9 times out of 10, like I just sit there and people just think that I'm pooping and I just wait until they leave and then use the bathroom. So there's some strategies, but it's still pretty annoying. And I'm hoping that sometime, since I am in an area that's supposed to be a little more accepting, that I can kind of move past all of that and work through it. But it's still something that I'm trying to work for. So bathrooms are a huge thing for me and probably a big portion of the community. Especially those who haven't been able to have any type of surgery. So that's a big thing. I don't really know of any other, I'm trying to think. 'Cause I mean, there's not many things that we haven't touched on that have been big issues. And like dating was a big one, but Think I've kind of found someone that I'm gonna not have to worry about ever dating again. So, I think one of the big things for me was like the whole name change process, and gender change. And I think what was hard for me is when I was in college is when I changed my name, and it was very hard to find what all I needed. And so when I went to the courthouse, I didn't have it all the first time. And so I had to wait like another 4 months because it takes the FBI like 3 months to pretty much tell me that I didn't commit any crime. And it just was absurd. So I had to wait like 3 extra months for that. And then I had to go back. And then there was something else that I was missing. But like by that point, I had bought a packet online that was like, this is all you need to change your name in North Carolina. Well, of course, I had things that were missing. And so I had to go back. And I asked the lady, I was like, can I just type it on a computer and sign it? And, she pretty much told me that was okay. So I went back and typed it on a computer and then went back the next day and it was done. And so I think just the struggle of not having access to what I needed was difficult for that. I didn't really have, a negative experience with it. It was just, it was not easily accessible for me. And with the gender change, it's weird because when you look it up, the quote unquote language pretty much says that you have to have bottom surgery. Or that's what it alludes to. But I mean, the way that the surgeon writes it, it can mean anything. And so luckily the one that I went to was pretty much like, okay, like I'm not, you've had your top surgery, you're done, we'll change it. And it was really weird because I had to change. I didn't have to. I was just home at the time. So I changed my gender marker on my license and my social security card, both like in my hometown. And, they were both pretty good experiences. The social security, like, I didn't need to have surgery for that, so I was able to change that when I changed my name. But for the driver's license, I had to. And I think what I appreciated about that, because in social security, you're kind of apart anyway, and nobody really speaks very loud, but in driver's license places, there's 100 million people, so everybody's like screaming at the top of their lungs to be able to be heard. So the guy that I went to didn't necessarily 100% know, like, if he had to make a copy of my paperwork or if he just scanned it and gave it back to me. So he like went and got somebody, and like they were whispering the whole time. And I think a lot of people might take that like as an like a offense of like you're just gonna whisper about what's going on. But like I appreciated that because my hometown is not an accepting place for anybody that's not white or rich, pretty much. And so if you don't fit in that category or straight and cisgendered, so it was like anybody outside of that category was an outsider. And so to me, having the respect to think, oh, this person might not want this to be said at screaming level or where other people can hear it, that meant something to me, as a respect thing. And I didn't have any issues with him either. And so a lot of the stuff has been fairly easy to do, as in like no pushback. But all the things that I had to change my name on, like all my credit cards, were pretty difficult to do. Student loans was the worst. Doing it all through school, I mean, it was like list after list after list that I had to do, and none of it was like uniform of we got you in the system and you're good to go. So a lot of it was pretty hard. And I think just the fact of having a name change and like going through all this, like jobs was a big one for me. especially ones that do extensive background checks. And so it's the job that I have now. They did a pretty extensive one. Like, I had to list everywhere I lived my whole life, and that was like 20 different places. But after I did that, I was like, they're gonna know. Like, they're gonna know that I've changed my name and done all this stuff. And so that was pretty terrifying for me because, other than the background check, I was pretty much cleared to work. And I was like, this is gonna be the one thing that screws up my life. And thankfully, it didn't. But it's like the constant fear that I have of, is this gonna be something that keeps me from thriving in life, pretty much? And it's weird to say it like that because I think if you talk to anyone that knew me my whole life, or even just like high school and now, when you look at it and when everyone looks at it, pretty much the main difference in my life has been this transition. And I mean, I've been in therapy, I think, since I was like 13. And I credit a lot of my progress to the fact of my most recent counselor that I had was the best for me. And also, like, she looked like my high school teacher that I had a crush on, so I like easily trusted her really quickly. But I think a lot of it, like, even in the year and a half that I was working with her before I transitioned, I was very like adamant against 99% of the things that she said to me. Like, I just wouldn't put in the work, and just kind of kept that wall up. And even when I tried, it just didn't work for me. And as soon as I transitioned and, got out of a relationship that I was in, like, everything fell into place for me. And I always tell everybody that, this transition saved my life, and I think a lot of people say that very lightheartedly. But for me, my mental health would not have started going in the positive direction. I probably would still be doing a lot of things, self-sabotage, drinking excessively like I was, kind of just doing whatever, and if it killed me, I didn't really care. And so when I took that transition, a lot of it changed for me. And so it saved my life in that sense, but now it's like a fear that the fact that I transition may put a hold on the things that I do in my life. And so it's like a double-edged sword. And like, my next fear is, when we go to buy a house, or if we plan to adopt kids, when we adopt kids, like, when people do that background check, is that going to be an issue? Like, are they going to come up with that and say, no, we're not going to sell you a house because of this identity, or no, we're not going to let you have this kid because of this? And so it's like a constant worry and anxiety, that I'm not going to be able to live a quote unquote normal life that people would, just because of aligning myself on the outside with pretty much who I've been my whole life. And I think this story will come up when I talk with my mom too, but a lot of people who knew me for a while, pretty much said, there was never any time that I knew you before that you were like, oh, I want to be a dude and all this stuff. And for a while, to me, like, 99% of the stories that I listen to, like, these people knew pretty early on, like, in their life. And I was like, does that mean that because I didn't know it as a kid that I can't align with this identity? Like, it made me feel really out of place. And then I remember, I don't know, it was after or before my surgery, that my mom and I sat down and had this conversation, and she told me that when I was a kid, like a little kid, I would run around and, tell everybody that I was a boy and that I wanted to be a boy. And so that was very validating for me. And then my granddad, My mom's dad always used to be able to tell what people were having when they were pregnant. And so he was famous to it to the point that people would come find him and ask him. Like that was his thing. And so when my mom was pregnant with me, he kept telling her, "I can't tell, I don't know." And so that was a part of the pregnancy that, was just weird. I mean, it could just be a coincidence. Like, who always knows what they're having? Like, nobody's 100% perfect at anything. But even to the point of me being born, like, the whole time my mom was pregnant, the nurses and the doctors were like, "You're having a boy by the way the baby's laying, the heartbeat, and everything." And so, to the time that my mom was in labor, there was the blue bonnet and the blue blanket and all the typical gender crap that they give you when you're born, and then I pop out and everyone's like, "Well, that was a surprise." And so even to the way that my body was as a like in utero pretty much signaled this kid's a boy. And then the fact that my grandpa couldn't tell, and then I went around my whole childhood life screaming that I was a boy. And I never liked shirts. I think 99% of my shirts as a kid until I started, getting like 8 or 9, and that's when you typically always have to wear a shirt as a female. Like, that was just the way my life was. And, I think until about fourth grade, my mom kept making me, it wasn't even that I wanted to, my mom kept making me shop in the little girl section, and finally she was like, "Forget it, I'm tired of fighting with you," and let me go. And so for the next 3 years, that's kind of what I wore. I always shopped in the men's section and that kind of thing. And like I said in the first one, kind of when puberty hit is kind of when I was like, "Oh, okay, let's just go with this life that I'm supposed to have," and kind of started dressing more feminine. And it was also one of those things of I played sports, so when you have games, especially away games, you have to dress up. Or home games, I don't remember which one it was. But one of the two, you had to dress up, and the other one, you could wear your sweats. And so I would have to dress up. And it wasn't, that was not acceptable. Like, if I would have shown up to school for a game and like khaki pants and a button down, that was like for men. Like, I think I probably could have wore it if they were, girl khakis and girl butt downs. But I probably would have been sent home, or they would have told me that I couldn't play. And so I kind of knew that expectation, and I hate confrontation. So I kind of just said, "Okay, whatever," and went with it. And so and from seventh grade until my junior year of high school, I kind of fit in that norm that was expected of me, and a lot of it for me was trying to fit in. And I was a star basketball and softball player in eighth grade, so I was the quote unquote popular kid. So I was like, "Well, this feels nice." So I kind of wanted to keep that. And then I went into ninth grade, and all my quote unquote friends from middle school weren't my friends anymore. And so then I had to find new friends, and freshman year was kind of when I decided that, okay, I might be bisexual. And then obviously it turned into just women, and now it's like I don't even know. But so when I kind of started dating girls publicly, it like I didn't have hardly any friends outside of my avid class or ROTC. Because in those two classes, it didn't really matter what you were. And AVID, everybody just wanted to go to college, and everybody was a minority in some way. So we all kind of stuck together. And then in ROTC, nobody really cares about what you are as long as you can run fast, do a lot of push-ups, or do something. I mean, it was really, they were the two safest places that I could be in high school. And so, and around that time, too, like ninth grade, kind of in eighth grade, I was already struggling with depression. That was kind of the first year that I had
self-harmed was in eighth grade, and so I was already going through a lot as well. And so then everything in my, like, everybody started dying in ninth grade. It was absolutely horrible. And so in 11th grade, when I kind of decided I don't need anybody friend-wise, like, I had a good girlfriend at the time. We didn't get along very well as a couple. And my family, from like all the death that we had experienced, we had kind of come closer together in a weird way. We still follow the time, but we kind of, the "we got your back" was more evident in that time. So I kind of decided in that period that I didn't care about, my status at high school. I didn't care about how many friends I had. Like, what I had already was good enough. And so we donated our hair, and then I just felt more comfortable. And I was like, I don't want to wear these tight pants anymore, which is weird because now all I wear are slim and skinny jeans. But I was like, I don't want to wear these tight pants anymore. I don't want to have to worry about having the quote unquote perfect body figure. Like, I don't want to be what the world and society expects from me as a woman. And so I don't know if that's what kind of led me to believe or, accept the part of me that's like, okay, I'm not really a woman, that I rebelled against the expectations of me. But I think a lot of time, whenever I meet someone and have to have this conversation, and they see that I was once like a very, like, quote unquote, expectation of a teenage girl, like, to them that throws them off. They're like, oh, maybe you're not, and it's just a stage. And like, no. But that's kind of the one thing that people don't get is, for me, folding and adhering to those norms and expectations was a way for me to survive. And like I talked about with both my last two guests, my ex-girlfriend and then my best friend, with the place that we grew up, I probably would have either been seriously beaten up or probably killed in my hometown if I had come out as transgender when I lived there. And it's still like there's some fear that if I run into someone that I went to high school with and they realize who I am and who I was, like, that might be a huge issue. But I know that I'm gonna leave that hometown and half of the idiots that are still there still live there for some reason. And so to me, like, that's enough. Like, I don't have to fight back. It's the fact that I know that I left my hometown and was confident enough in my ability and my success to move away from my family and be independent, and that I didn't need my family's quote unquote money and success to get me into college, which that's a whole nother rant. That I did this on my own and I'm independent. And to me, that's enough of a comeback that I could probably ever say to them. So, I don't even know how this conversation started, but I'm gonna end that right there. So, I don't really know where to go from here. I don't know, Paige, you got any questions or things that you want me to talk about since you're the one that's here? But yeah, while I wait to see if Paige loves me enough to brainstorm, I think one of the things we'll just talk about, like, kind of what's going on now. One of the things that I'm happy about is it finally got warm enough here in New York. And I mean, it like went from winter to summer. And so me and my girlfriend went to the beach the other day, and like, I'm not 100% like comfortable with my body in the sense of body weight. Like, I'm fine with everything else. It's just the body weight. And as I tell it to my girlfriend, that I live with you body weight, because I put it on like all on once we live together. And so, like, that's an issue for me right now. But a lot of the times, like, if I were to go to the beach in North Carolina today, because they've stupidly already opened up beaches again, but if I were to go there, like, I would not take my shirt off. I did one time, and it was with me, my cousin, her girlfriend, and then my brother from 2 weeks ago who was on the episode with me. And so we went, and he hasn't had surgery yet. So he was there. He kept his shirt on. He might have taken it off, but he has to wear a binder, so he still had that. But so I took mine off, and I had just had my second, like, quote-unquote, it wasn't really a revision, but kind of touch-up surgery. And so those scars were really still, like, especially under my arms, like, everything else has kind of faded to my skin color almost. Like, under my arms is still really pink. And so I remember going to the beach and taking my shirt off because it in North Carolina is like 100 degrees at the beach. And so, like, you can't wear a shirt and be comfortable. So I remember taking it off. And even just from like the 2 seconds of having it off, I think there was like four people looking at me. And it's so weird to me because I'm always the person that's like, let me find the best in a situation. So to me, it's like, let me just think that they're just curious or they just want to know, not really like that they're talking shit about me. So I kind of had that mindset, one, to probably protect my own self, but also not to create a fight because I'm a very, I stand my ground on my identity and myself. So that's kind of an it. Like, I didn't like taking my shirt off, but I did it anyway because I was at the beach. But we went to the beach this weekend, and I more and more took my shirt off because, like, my forearms were already red, and I was like, well, if I'm gonna tan, I want it to at least be somewhat even. So I took my shirt off, and granted, there weren't as many people at a normal beach. But it was like I didn't feel uncomfortable doing it outside of the fact of like my weight right now, but as the fact of like my scars or somebody knowing, like I felt safer. I didn't feel 100% safe, and I don't think I ever will. Just because you never know. Like, it's so mixed into the world right now where people stand. But it was like I didn't have to worry constantly. And to me, that's like a really, really big plus for me. But it also comes in with we're supposed to, me and another guy that work with the same kid, we're supposed to take him fishing this week. And I really don't want to wear a shirt. Like, I am intolerable to heat at all. And so the thought of being outside fishing for like 3 to 4 hours in a shirt just. It makes me really uncomfortable just thinking about it. So I'm like, well, I want to wear a tank top. And I know that tattoos aren't an issue for here, so this guy seeing some birds on my arm aren't an issue. But like, if I lift my arm up, there's like a 1 inch of a scar that comes out, from my tank top. And I'm like, man, what am I gonna say if somebody, says something about it? And my thing is, I know not 100% because I did this in a biology class, but in our genetics class in biology, we did the whole spit in a tube and did the whole experiment thing and pretty much ran to see if we had the gene for breast cancer. And that's been in my family. Cancer's been in my family. So, I think that later on in my life, that probably would have been the decision I made if it became an issue to like just chop them off to save, myself from what all that entails and my family as well, because I don't really think we could go through that again. So that's always kind of been a thing that I think that I would tell people is, yeah, breast cancer runs in my family, so I just decided to, take the first step because I knew I had the gene. But to me, that kind of feels weird. So I don't know, like that's a worry that I have of, wearing a tank top. And it's so like, And I think that's one of the hard parts for me about being transgender is it's just the little things. Like, I don't ever think there's a big thing that I'm worried about. There's one, and I'll get to that in a second, but it's like the tiny things of like taking my shirt off at the beach or wearing a tank top around people who don't know about me. And having to answer questions and that kind of thing. And it's so, or like wearing sweatpants, because everybody knows when guys wear sweatpants, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Nobody wears good enough underwear to hide that in sweatpants. And so it's like when I wear sweatpants, I know that I have to pack, and it's just so exhausting all of the time. And like going through airports, like I've never had a negative experience in an airport. But like I'm afraid that if I decide to pack and go through an airport that it's gonna be an issue, and I'm just it's not it's just so exhausting because I think I have to think about certain things all the time. And one of the things that I found from my internship last semester is I still have certain I don't even know the word for it. But like sometimes I stand a certain way or cross my legs or a certain way or do something that alludes to femininity. And it after that I was like, wow, now I have to think about the way that I freaking stand all the time or like sit cross-legged. I'm like, that's just so much for me to I already got enough going on in my brain as it is. Like I don't need to add this on all the time. And so it's just like having to think about so much all the time. It's just exhausting. And some of it to me, like, isn't worth it. So I can kind of shut it off. But I think a lot of it, in a way, the stuff that I think about is more of a safety thing. Because to me, like, that's something I would probably, get hurt over. Because, with. Like people in the bathrooms, like there's probably gonna be a time that someone's gonna say something and it's either gonna be really bad or they're gonna catch me at a wrong time and I'm gonna fight back. Maybe not like physically, but like verbally. And if somebody hits me, I was always taught when somebody touches you, you fight them right back. And I have no issue protecting myself. And so it's like I always have to think about these things, and I always have to think it in a way of, okay, what's going to get me out alive? Like, do I just deal with my emotions on my own time but make it out alive? Or do I stick up for myself and hope that I can fight to be okay at the end? And I know for a lot of people, like, if I told that to my mom, she'd probably be like, you make it out alive. Like, some people think that that's the better of the option, but you got to think about my whole life, someone, at least one person, has always told me who I'm supposed to be. Whether it was religion or gender identity or sexual identity or who I'm supposed to be, like as a career or academically or whatever. Like, someone has always told me this is the way you have to be. If you can't be that way, you can't reach your goal or we're done or whatever. And so to finally find who I am and be happy about it, like I've had so many identities and I'm just like, this ain't it. Like, this is just miserable. So to find it and be happy with it and know that it's like this is it. And then have someone come back and say, no, it's not. Like, to me, those are fighting words. Like, everybody has specific words that they'll fight over. Like, those are fighting words to me. So it's not an easy choice. I think if I could get, because in that point, you got your three minds, your thinking brain, your emotional brain, and then your wise mind. Like, in that moment, I'm going to be very emotional. And I think that if I could get into my wise mind, I probably wouldn't fight because then I'd be like, well, if I get seriously hurt or die, then that leaves, my mom without her kid. And, I go down that whole road, but I'm not gonna take the time to do that. So I kind of always also have to be in my wise mind 99% of the time. And that's exhausting. And so it just seems like it's always the little things. And the big thing that I mentioned earlier is kind of like the next step in my process. So I do want to get bottom surgery. And if you guys don't know, it's at least two surgeries. I think it's three or four, depending on what doctor you go to. And it's like anywhere between 50 and 100K. So it's not like normal people can go get this surgery out of a whim. And so I have a doctor here in New York that knows a doctor that's an hour away that has started doing, because most doctors who do surgeries do male to female surgeries, and it's very hard to find ones that do female to male because it's more surgeries and there's a lot more to it. And so it's like I've got this doctor that I can go to, and now it's like the step of calling the insurance. And so I like psyched myself out because I looked at a PowerPoint that somebody made. I don't even know how long ago the PowerPoint was made, but it was like it had all the pictures of the surgeries on it, and I kind of knew, like I wasn't, completely in the dark about it, but I think more of the complications behind it, I didn't really know. And so I read into those and I was like, nope, I'm out. And then I think in total it's like a 2 year process. And for me, like to have to tell my job, I have to take probably about a month to 2 months off in total, over this 2 year period. Like, I would have to tell somebody what's going on. Like, I can't just say that and then it just be it. So then there's the fear of, well, if I tell them, am I gonna lose my job? So it's like that part of it, the psyching myself up from complications. And then in my brain, I'm like, dude, just call the insurance company because if they can't cover it, then you can't do it anyway. So then that just wipes everything out. But for me, like, I'm in this constant battle because bathrooms are a big thing. So if I can pee standing up, that solves like 99% of my problems, right? So it's this huge battle between, because to me, it's not that it's not worth it. I think to me, it's do I have the willpower to do it? And I say that because I remember I watched this one guy on YouTube who had bottom surgery, and I think he had just like finished everything. And then he went to go like pee, and he peed in the shower because he knew that there was like a possibility that it would, not go right, and then he would end up peeing on his shoes or whatever. And so he went, and that's what happened. It was kind of it came out of one of the incisions and then didn't go well. And just like him after that was just, he was heartbroken. And like to me, I don't know if I could take that. Like, if I took that big of a risk and put that much effort and probably that much money into it, and then it didn't work, I'd be like questioning my whole life at that point. Like, I don't know if that's something that I could handle emotionally and mentally. And when I get in those states, like, I also ruin a lot of relationships. Like, I get really mad, I get really irritable. And so, like, I don't want to lose the relationship that I'm in now. Everybody and me and my family are in a really good point, and not that we haven't ever not been, but like, it's taken a while for me and my mom to get to the point where she's my mother, but also my friend, and we can kind of switch those roles. So she can, like, listen and respond in a friend way, but then I'm like, oh, I need my mom, then she can switch. And so I don't want to ruin that either. And so it's just, that's like a big thing that I've been trying to do. And I'm just keep telling myself, like, just call the insurance company, because if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Because there's no way in hell I'm ever going to get like 100K to have this surgery. And so, unless this doctor does it for some cheap amount, I'm pretty much SOL at that point. So that's kind of a big thing. And for me, that's something that I kind of teetered on for a while, because I don't really, like, I don't need it to validate my identity. Like, that's not a reason that I'm doing it. Or I probably would have done it a while ago. Like, I'm very confident and secure in my identity without it. It just solves a lot more of my issues. Like the bathroom thing, and that's pretty much it, is the bathroom thing at this point. And so it's just hard. And I think for a lot of people, it's an easy decision, and some it's a hard, and I'm kind of in the middle because I know I do want it, but like I said, I don't know if it's something that I'm willing to put my mental health on the line for. And you know, you're supposed to have a therapist anyway. You have to have two letters from a therapist, from two different ones. And so, you know, they kind of prepare for that, but I don't have a therapist right now. And so that's kind of a thing of, you know, even if I get one and I have this surgery, like, I don't even know if I'll keep them. Like, I'm so not ready to have a therapist again. So there's a lot with that. But that's kind of the main things that's going on. I had another one, but then I kept talking, so I forgot it because I didn't write it down. I think another thing that I wanted to touch on a little bit is kind of, sorry, is like the fears. Let me write this down because I will forget all of it in like 2 seconds. So like the fears and the hard things, both about the transition and just the identity in general. So one of the fears that I had, and my mom and my dad both had, were, you know, transitioning and then realizing this isn't it, because I did have a lot of mental health issues before, during, and sometime after my transition, both with the shots and the surgery. And so, you know, there was the fear of, is this us trying to fix, I say us, but me trying to fix, you know, the mental health stuff, and then we do it and it's just not gonna work. Which you should never have any type of surgery to fix a mental health issue unless it's like that's an actual remedy for it. And so it was more of, are we trying to do this to fix it? Not will we do it and not work. So that was a fear. I don't think it was really a huge one for me. Just because I could tell, like, and I had to wait a little bit too. And I think that helps for me because I'm a very spontaneous person. And so if I have time to think about things, if I'm going to change my mind, I usually will. Like if I go shopping, I put something in the cart and then I walk around with it. And if by the time I'm ready to check out, I don't want it anymore, I don't have the same excitement, then I put it back. And so the fact that I had to wait, I think it was at least 5 months between even the like initial appointment to the surgery, because I could have backed out any time at that point. So those 5 months kind of gave me time to think about it. And I think the fact that I wasn't, like, I was happy about it, but it wasn't like, if I don't have this surgery at this date, my life's gonna fall apart. Or, you know, I'm gonna die without this surgery. I think that since that wasn't my mindset, that kind of put some of those fears at ease. And I think also, like, as time got closer, like I said, I was happy. I don't want anyone to think that I'm not happy. But it became like more of a reality than like, oh, I don't even know how to explain this. But to me, And here's where I think I can explain a little bit better. So usually 9 out of 10 times when you look up like top surgery results, most people, when they're taking the bandages off and they see their chest for the first time, are like crying and smiling ear to ear. And not that I didn't smile, because I was happy. But to me, I think me and my mom talked about this, because I think she was like worried that I wasn't like ecstatic. But to me, it was like having the surgery was a fix to a problem. It wasn't like adding something extra on to make me happy. Like I told her that I'm just finally who I'm supposed to be. And it was more of like a homecoming. Yeah, that's not the right word. I can't think of it. But it just felt right. And so I was happy, but it was like I was comfortable. I'm like, this is how I felt my whole life. I just now have 8 pounds less of me. I probably didn't, because I was swollen from surgery, but it was like I had this weight lifted and I could breathe and I felt comfortable and at home in my body. So it was like I was happy, but I wasn't like, yes, all my problems are fixed. And so I think that mindset for me, kind of got rid of all that fear that I had. Because to me, it wasn't a solution. It was like fixing a problem, which I guess are the same, but it wasn't, let's do this and hope I'm happy. It's like, let's do this to, I don't know. I'm gonna just confuse myself and more afterwards, so I'm gonna just end that there. I think another fear was the coming out process in general. And I say that because I technically came out twice. Because I told my mom and my aunt probably like a year and a half or 2 years before I started transitioning. And I remember it was like an article online, and it was something about, transgender people. And I sent it to my aunt, and I was like, I'm starting to think that I'm not a lesbian. And I like sent it to her. And then we talked for a little while, and then I sent it to my mom. And I remember my mom called me, and I didn't answer. I was like, I don't want to talk about it on the phone. And she was like, you can't send me this and not talk about it. And I think at that point she was kind of okay with it. But I think, and I'll bring this up with her so she can share her reality. But I think for her, she was like, this is just my kid being spontaneous again and doing some random shit or whatever. So she didn't, I don't think she really took it that seriously as I was serious about it. And so when I had to do it again, and it's weird because I kept bringing it up like over the 2 years, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna start hormones, but I'm gonna wait until I can pay for them so you don't have to. And she was like, okay. And so I would like bring it up, and I remember I stopped shaving my legs, and she made a comment about it one day, and I'm like, this just didn't click in your brain. Did it, but I didn't bring it up. I was like, whatever. And so, when I had to come out again to her, it was in a way of, hey, this is who I am. I'm gonna start hormones. I've got the money. This is it. And I was expecting my mom to be okay with it, because she had been, over the past year and a half or 2 years, and then she wasn't. And so when my mom kind of pulled the plug on that, it kind of amplified my fear. I was like, well, if my mom doesn't accept it, how is everybody else gonna do it? And then I really had one with my dad, and that kind of thing. So coming out was a big fear for me. And I think that the fear of also, like, how do I do this without my family? Because when I went to even start hormones, they give you a mental health check. It's pretty much just a questionnaire. And then they ask who your supports are. So at that time I was just like my girlfriend, then I don't think they would have, let me start, and I wouldn't have either because that relationship turned out to be a shit show. So it's like I was afraid I was going to be alone, and I don't ever like feeling that way, but in that moment, that probably would have hurt me the most. So that was a big fear as well. Obviously, the fear of safety, that's a continuing thing for me. Some things that have been hard, I think, not really learning to adjust, but like I talked about earlier, like there's apparently certain ways that I sit and, stand, that are feminine. So kind of having to learn in a way how to be like outwardly masculine without being like one of those guys that have a huge ego and, have to have the whole world to know that they're a dude. So trying to find that balance and also like it being natural. Like there's certain things that I know I do that are very masculine that are natural, but trying to constantly always be aware of that is hard. I think I remember when I first started, I had two really good friends. Obviously, they weren't that good. But two good friends at the time who literally called me after I came out to them or a few days later. And I think we were on the phone for like 3 hours. And it was a 3 hour conversation of them telling me that I was a girl and that I was just tripping. And then me trying to argue, but ended up just listening. And I think I muted myself and like cried for an hour. And so, and that was like before I came out to my family and everything. So it was like these people are supposed to be my friends and just spent 3 hours trying to convince me of who I was. So what the heck does that mean for everybody else? So that was really hard for me. And I think it was hard also in the sense of like it was my first year in college, so I didn't really have like a lot of friends. And I was trying to cling back to, the familiarity, I cannot say that word, of home when I was in a completely different part of the state. And so they were like my home to me. And then they just like completely stabbed me in the back in a way. And so that wasn't very easy for me. And that also like put in the fear of, these people who I grew up, not really grew up with, but like I had been friends with before who I hadn't talked to in a while. And, having to think about, or are they going to be the same way? Should I just cut them off now and just not feel the pain? So I think the hardest part about all of this has been losing people. And I think the reason why it's the hardest part is because to me it's over something so simple. Like I feel if, they cheated on me or, broke the code of dating or whatever, like, did something that people automatically cut you off for, that would have felt more natural to me. But I think the fact that it was just over how I viewed myself and how I identified that I was like, no, we can't be friends over this. Like, to me, something so simple on their part that ruined our friendship was like the hardest part for me. Because I think for me, it's just so, like, I don't understand for anybody why it's so hard to accept someone's identity. And who they are, unless it's like, one of those where you're in a toxic relationship and they're like, oh, that's just who I am. That kind of thing is different, but especially with like race and gender and sexuality, like it, to me, it's just so easy to accept. And I don't understand why people can't do that, especially if it doesn't involve them. So that was hard. And it's even weirder because they kept trying to come back into my life and they would, you know, be like, oh, I miss you and all this stuff. And I'm like, no, like, that's not, we're not doing that. And so it took me like 3 years to cut one of them off. So if that's any inclination of how hard that was. But I think losing people was hard. A lot of the mental health stuff that came with it, was hard. And I think it was just in the fact of, like I said, transitioning was like the key to me getting better, mentally. And so when I transitioned, it was like, all right, we're fixing all of our problems now. And so that was a lot for me. And I think I'm gonna say all of this is the hardest because I just keep thinking of things that are hard. But I think if I sit down and really think about it, I think the absolute hardest for me, one was short and one's that I have to live with for the rest of my life, but one of them being my mom's initial reaction. And I say that of, if I think about it, how I was in the moment, because when I think about it now, I know that she was afraid and she was just reacting. And so I'm able to accept that reaction from her. But I think, but when I think about that, usually it's the way I felt in the moment. Like, I remember I was in my first class. It was 8 a.m. in the morning. And she texted me and I immediately went to the counseling place. I skipped my second class. Thankfully, my counselor that I had was available. So I went and talked to her and I was like bawling my eyes out. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so, like, I can still feel that pain. And to me, that's a pain that I don't ever want to feel again and, like, wouldn't wish on anybody. And so that was the hardest, one of the hardest for me, is living in a mindset for, I think it was 5 days. I think me and my mom didn't talk for 5 days. Living in that mindset of, what do I do without my mom? Or how do I live without my mom? Like, my mom's pretty much been my everything for my whole life, and now she don't like me no more. And so that was a big thing that I had to work through. Because by the end of the 5 days, I was like, okay, if you're not going to be here, then you're not going to be here, and that's okay. So that was a lot of work that I had to put in then too. And then the one that I have to live with is my dad, and the fact that I pretty much put all of myself into a relationship that I didn't get all of him back. And how something so simple to do, especially when you're dying. Like, I'm not even gonna lie to you guys. As soon as I found out, like, if it had just been cancer in his eye again, I probably would have been like, okay, no big deal. Although, you know, one of the struggles was that we thought he was gonna be blind for the rest of his life and how that was gonna look. So that was hard too, but when we figured out that it was, you know, in other parts of his body, and it wasn't just one, it was pretty much almost everywhere, I knew that it was done. Like, I didn't give any false hope to myself, because that's where I get in trouble. So I knew that he was going to die. It was just a matter of when, and how fast, or how bad it was going to be. And so, to me, like, if I were on my deathbed right now, anybody that I had bad blood with that deserved it, like, to be forgiven, I would forgive them. Or even just forgive them for me and not themselves. Like, I know one person that I probably would have a really hard time saying that to, but I would do it. And there probably wouldn't be, there's a couple of things that you could tell me that I wouldn't understand or like accept you for. And so to me, like when you have a kid, that's it. Like you get rid of all of your like ways of life of what you think are, except like there are a few, I will say there are some morals that I cannot argue against. But like when you have a kid, to me, that's when you say, I'm gonna accept my kid no matter what. And things happen throughout life. And you know, sometimes there are some like moments that I could see just being like, oh my God, is this kid even mine? But to me, when you're dying and you only have one biological kid, like there should be no reason that you don't put in your full, you know, like regardless of if you're dying or not, but really, like when you know you're dying. And so I think that is going to be one of the hard things that I have to live with for the rest of my life. And I think another reason that it makes it so hard is that I will never have answers. And I hate that in general in life. And so now it's like, I'm really about to not have answers to this for the rest of my life. So that's been pretty difficult. But I think what makes it easier for me is that, you know, I call my stepdad my dad too. And so, you know, my second dad is very accepting. And so I think the fact that I have him makes the situation a whole lot easier, because I can, you know, tell myself I have this adult man that is a father figure that accepts me. So I can say, yeah, my dad accepts me. That's cool. So I think that helps. I think if I didn't have that, it'd probably be a lot worse. But I do have him. So that's a little bit more comforting than what it was a couple of months ago when I was kind of just swimming around and all of it. So yeah, I'm gonna drink some water. So if you hear a big slursh, that's what that is, and I apologize. But I don't ever talk this much at once. So I had to get some water. Well, my two friends that are up here, Zoli Page didn't have no questions, so it's up to you two now of if we're gonna keep this going or if we're gonna end it right here. But Paige, I hope you're having a good Memorial Day. I know Zoli's life, so and I hope you're staying safe in Tennessee with everything opening back up. But hopefully you're staying at home and not like all these other people that are going out and braving the world. But we miss you too. You should, you know, try to love us a little bit more on Fortnite or Mario Party, but it's cool. So yeah, I think we'll probably just end this one here. I mean, I don't really have a lot of other stuff to talk about. If I kept rambling, I probably would, but that just seems a little extra right now. So okay, we will be there. So yeah, guys, this is it until like July. There may be one halfway through. I might just come up with one and do it then. But as for now, until the Tuesday after July 4th, this is it. And we will be back in July. So I will see you, Zoli, in a few minutes. And Paige, I will talk to you later tonight. Bye, guys. I just ended the live stream on Facebook that we just did. And this is it. This is the mid. It's not really the mid, but as for right now, the season break. We will be back in July. When I can go back home and kind of do the interviews with my family. So, if you would like this to continue after season one, make sure you guys message me, listen to the podcast, and give this a lot of love. Make sure to follow my Instagram at Aliem with the T. And you can also find us on Facebook. And this podcast will be there as well. Getting the Tea with Aliem. And we also have merch. And you can check that out. And the links both on Facebook, on Instagram, and the website. Be sure to message me any comments or topics that you want to talk about. If we get a lot of them, I'll do another one between now and July. So I will see you guys whenever I see you. You guys stay safe. The world's reopening. Take precautions. Please wear a mask. Please bring hand sanitizer. Wash your hands. Keep a safe distance. Even if the world's opening, try to limit as much as you can possible. You guys stay safe. All of the love, Allie M.